This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Peaceful protests continue as the country reckons with its relationship with police. In some cities, the protesters showed up in such large numbers that officials called in the National Guard. They were meant to bolster law enforcement's presence and control the protests, but some Guard members rejected those orders to deploy, and now they may face consequences. Carson Frame joins me now. She's the military and veterans issues reporter with Texas Public Radio and a correspondent for the American Homefront Project. Welcome, Carson.
Thank you so much, Frank, for having me. I look forward to chatting about this.
Well, it's an interesting subject, and so we need a little bit of background, I guess. Remind us what the National Guard is and their role in the armed services.
Sure. So the National Guard serve on a part-time basis, usually within the domestic United States. So they're basically a localized military response. Every state has its own National Guard. And because they're state-operated, National Guardsmen who are activated in a state are also usually residents of that state. I should say that the president has the power to federalize them in some situations or pull them into different locations. And more recently, they've been dealing with emergencies like natural disasters. That's their typical role, I guess. But they've been, you know, recently doing more work with coronavirus and disinfection and supplies and things like that, and work along the southern border, too. So it's been more of a mix. So they're military personnel, but they typically work civilian jobs too, and they train that one weekend a month and 2 weeks a year.
Right, and in terms of chain of command, because you do have this kind of confusing setup where you have a National Guard under state control. Are they under the chain of command under the U.S. Military, or are they strictly under the control of the state unless the president federalizes them?
I mean, it's definitely the latter. I think there's some confusion between the Guard and the reserves. Mm. They all kind of fall under that military reserve force. The main difference between those Guard and reserve components, though, is the command. Right. So reserve units are part of those federal armed forces, and they're under the president. But the president has the power to federalize Guard troops if needed, and but at the same time, like a governor doesn't have control over reserve units, so reservists wouldn't be called to respond to floods and hurricanes or things like that.
And then to add to the confusion, guardsmen are sometimes called citizen soldiers. So can you explain what that label means?
Sure. I mean, I think that's a reference to, you know, their part-time service and the fact that they, you know, reside in these communities where they might later serve. I actually saw an interesting admission about this from the National Guard Bureau in D.C. The chief over there was talking about the civil unrest mission that's been underway. And he said it's an uncomfortable mission because our Guard members are from these communities, you know.
So let's talk about that mission and talk about this story in particular. What were Guard members ordered to do with regard to these protests?
I mean, I think a lot of it was to kind of reduce criminal activity on the ground, kind of manage the flow of crowds and block off streets. So they had sort of a limited law enforcement type of role. Some of them were asked to carry weapons, but the actual mission kind of depended on, you know, the state in which they were activated.
Yeah, and as we say, the story is that there are some National Guard members who did not want to participate in this, and I want to play a clip from one of the California National Guard members you spoke with for your story, and he's explaining his decision to refuse the order to deploy to a protest in California.
If I made the decision to go along with it, I feel like I would sort of be compromising, you know, who I am in that moment, you know. What we're told is discourage people from, you know, criminal activity and things like that, but that isn't necessarily what is going to be communicated on the ground when you see people, you know, in uniform with weapons, you know, standing around in formation. So we have people dealing with COVID, we've had people dealing with, you know, natural disasters and things like that, but to actually go out and be sort of this invading force, like many people are not comfortable with it. They feel like it's not really what they signed up for.
And that was a California Air Guardsman interviewed by Carson Frame, granted anonymity and his voice altered to protect him from the career ramifications. I'm here with Carson now talking about her reporting on National Guard members who refused to deploy. So this guardsman spoke about the moral objection to deploying. Can you expand on the reasoning that you heard by others who said that they didn't want to do this?
Yeah, so from what I saw and heard, guardsmen had a fairly wide range of objections to these protest deployments. So it wasn't like a one size fits all. Some of them said they had seen, you know, a lot of examples of police and service members acting out of line, and they didn't want to be complicit in that in any way. Others were concerned about training. I mean, basically, they hadn't had experience in riot control or de-escalation. And they would say to me, basically, like, I'm not comfortable carrying a weapon in these circumstances because who knows what could happen? Who knows what pressure I could be under? And, you know, I also heard people say, you know, these protesters are exercising First Amendment rights, and we as guardsmen took oaths to defend the Constitution. So I'm having trouble reconciling that in my mind. And there were kind of, as you heard in that clip, some concerns about sustaining a moral injury, like not being able to forgive themselves for what they did or feeling as though they would end up perhaps on the wrong side of history. But really, like, that self-preservation motivation was pretty far down the list for most of them. And in a general way, I think there was a lot of sympathy also with the protesters themselves. I mean, guardsmen kind of saw them as friends, family, or community. And then also, I mean, to be blunt about it, they were worried about some of the aggressive rhetoric coming out of Washington. I heard a couple people say, you know, they referenced the president's comment, when the looting starts, the shooting starts, and what that might mean for them and their activities on the ground.
Any sense of how widespread this sentiment is within the Guard?
I mean, I think I only spoke to a couple of organizations here, admittedly, but for example, the GI Rights Hotline was saying they were getting, you know, a handful of calls about this every day, every afternoon, and that was just a few counselors. So I think that there is, you know, there are significant pockets of the Guard that are feeling this way, Guard and Reserves, or at least some level of hesitation about the deployments. I don't know that most people who have concerns would say, you know, I'm simply refusing to activate altogether, but they may be taking other actions, you know, in terms of resistance.
Well, what are their rights in all of this? How far can a guard member go to refuse an order like this?
I mean, they do have some protections in terms of questioning orders. The Uniform Code of Military Justice offers some of that protection, but it's if a service member is refusing an unlawful order. So the idea is that a soldier or, you know, or an airman in that situation has a moral and legal obligation to the Constitution not to obey the order or the people that issued it. But for a guardsman to effectively reject an order, like at least in the legal sense, they have to point to a direct violation of the Constitution or the UCMJ. So it has to be really strong and really clear, and it can't just be a matter of opinion. So I think that's where some of these guardsmen might run into trouble.
Well, I was going to ask you, what kind of trouble? What are the potential consequences here?
Sure. I mean, there are definitely a lot of unknowns about how commands will punish troops who resist in some way, whether it's like refusing to obey orders and not showing up to the armory or refusing to fire a weapon. But if they don't show up, they could theoretically face really serious charges, desertion, absent without leave, or they could be made to separate from service, you know, perhaps with an other than honorable discharge, which might affect their careers or their lives further down the line. And there is the chance that they might not get punished at all. I mean, they could just face some kind of backlash from their commander or their peers or, like, just even members of the public. So I think that's also, right, you know, a possibility.
Well, I wonder if there are other moments in our history when the National Guard was certainly used in similar situations. We know they are, but whether or not they've that authorities have faced this kind of resistance.
Sure. I mean, I can't necessarily speak to guard deployments where, domestic guard deployments where there was a lot of resistance on the part of the service members. I can kind of speak to just the times in which they've been activated in tense periods in our history. I mean, the National Guard, I think, has been activated about 16 times at the federal level. And I think 9 of those had to do with riots, protests, or, enforced integration. So obviously, federal intervention helped to overcome resistance to integrations, especially in schools, in states like Arkansas, Mississippi, and Alabama. But it has been used to stop riots too. I mean, for example, after the assassination of MLK, and also after the acquittal of the LAPD officers who beat Rodney King. And then there have been a lot of state-level call-ups by governors for civil unrest too. So one example would be Kent State. Obviously, when Ohio National Guard members fired on a crowd of students protesting Vietnam. And then also, like, for example, the Watts riots in LA in 65, which were, basically a call to end mistreatment by police and discrimination with regard to housing, employment, schools, and things like that. So, I mean, in that case, the California Guard was called in and told to suppress that. And some deaths did occur as a result of those clashes. So there's been, a decent mix of federal and state level call-ups for the guard. Some I guess more popular than others, but I really don't know in terms of the number of those who resisted.
Carson Frame is the military and veterans issues reporter for Texas Public Radio, as well as a correspondent for the American Homefront Project. Carson, thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having me.